Recording in progress.
Well, you can tell everybody. Yeah, you can tell everybody. Go ahead and tell everybody. I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man. Yes, I am, yes, I am, yes, I am. I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man. I believe every lie that I ever told. Paid for every heart that I ever stole. I played my cards and I didn't fold. Well, it ain't that hard when you got sold. Somewhere I heard that life is a test. I've been through the worst, but I still get my best. God made my mold different from the rest. Then he broke that mold, so I know I'm blessed. Sun, won't hide my tail or turn and run. Do what must be done. Be a king when kingdom comes. Well, you can tell everybody. Yeah, you can tell everybody. Go ahead and tell everybody. I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man. Well, you can tell everybody. Yeah, you can tell everybody. Go ahead and tell everybody. I'm the man.
Good afternoon, good evening, good morning, wherever you are, whenever you are listening to this live on podcast. We'd like to thank you for joining us for another edition of Brother to Brother with Dr. Nate Chapman and Dr. Keelan Hinton. We are here for all of your mental health, community, love, relationship, attachment, and everything else in between all of your mental health needs. For those that would like to participate in the show, you can contact us at b2bpsych@gmail.com. That's B, the number 2, B, P-S-Y-C-H, b2bpsych@gmail.com. As we always say, we like to thank Marshall University as well as WMUL for allowing us to have this platform to talk about crucial mental health issues, community issues, love, relationship, attachment issues, and everything else in between. But as we always say, any of the perspectives or ideas that you hear on this show are not represented by Marshall University or WMUL, are not represented by any of their supporters, affiliates, or sponsors. But these are the sole perspectives and ideas of myself, Dr. Keelan Hinton, as well as Dr. Nate Chapman. So as we always say, while some of this may be therapeutic, this is not what, sir?
Not therapy. We do hope that you're seeing a therapist if you feel like that would be helpful to you. And we hope that some of this information is useful, but you're not going to be billing us and you're not going to be suing us because this is not therapy.
There you go. There you go. So again, those are our shameless disclaimers. So as we always start out with check-in, again, as we said before, the show is now coast to coast. I am in almost heaven, West Virginia, and Dr. Nate Chapman is in Southern California. So we are hitting California, West Virginia, and everywhere else in between. So we have gone coast to coast, my friend. How are you, my brother? How are things in sunny California?
Good. Living life. Living life.
I hear you. Living I hear life. You. It's not too hot, is it?
No. You know, it's like around late 70s.
You know, that's enough of that. That's enough of that nonsense. We don't want to hear it. It's enough of that nonsense. Things are good here. Things are great. How's the pandemic looking there? Have things started to shut down? Are people being more cautious? What's going on there?
I know in LA County, I'm in San Diego, but in LA County, I know they're back to masks. Things are not shut down, but they're back to mask requirement. That hasn't happened here in San Diego yet. But I think it will. And it's interesting because I always have a mask with me, and I think I've been putting it on to be courteous, but also because I'm not sure when I walk into a place what the expectation is going to be. Like, is it going to be? Is it not going to be? So,
yeah.
I just put it on to be, just so I don't have to be like, oh, I don't have it.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. Marshall is being as diligent as we can about making sure students have masks. If you're vaccinated, turning your vaccination cards. If you're not vaccinated, I think you have to. I think they're voluntold. they're going to test people who aren't. You know, randomly testing people who aren't vaccinated, I think. Don't quote me on that, but I think so. So yeah.
Well, you know, I wondered what your thoughts were on that because, it's required in my my employer requires it. But, you know.
Requires testing or being vaccinated?
Well, we won't take all down, but I just want to know what you thought of. I was reading a post by one of a cousin of mine. I thought she made an interesting point. And basically, you know, there have been doctor walk-offs, from the way I understand it, where doctors are now refusing to treat people that have come in with COVID because they haven't had the vaccination.
I've heard that before, yeah.
So I want to get your opinion on two things, your opinion on that, and then your opinion on mandates.
I don't know. I honestly don't know how to feel. How do I feel? I don't. I do know that the question is, I mean, are you putting other people at risk? I think you have a right to refuse to be vaccinated. But I also think people have the right not to let you in the door either. If you potentially could put other people, I mean, no, it. That's so tricky because it's me. I don't want to say, oh, we're not forcing you to get vaccinated. But if you're making people's lives complicated to have to make a choice, is that indirectly forcing people to have to do something, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's a hard question, hard position to put you in. I apologize, my brother.
Yeah. When I think about it
myself, I guess besides the mandate, the issue that I'm like really, really like interesting for me was doctors saying that they're not going to do the walkout and not treat. I think my immediate reaction was, well, isn't it the duty of a medical doctor to not do any harm? And then thinking about the points that my cousin was making was like, okay, so let's say that the doctor says that, hey, you're pre-diabetic or you're diabetic, you should not have sugar, you should not do this, and then you don't do it. And then you end up in the hospital with some type of situation because you didn't do whatever preventative things. Should the doctor then say, I'm not gonna treat you now? That when I thought about it, I was like, oh, well, that don't seem right.
Yeah. But that's also very different than, can I cough a sneeze on you and give you what I got?
Yeah, of course, they're different.
So I think that in that situation specifically that you talked about, yeah, that's wrong. But I personally, when it comes to healthcare professionals, I don't know or think that we have the right to turn anybody away. But that's just me. It is our jobs to fix people. That's what we do. That's what we signed
right
up for.
And I'm not trying to diminish the frustration that I'm sure the nurses and doctors are feeling, have been in this pandemic, have been on the front lines. I'm sure it's frustrating. And probably they feel like, you know, there's some things that can be done to avoid this death. But at the same time, when I think about the people who outside of the pandemic don't do what the doctors recommended, hey, I could be guilty of that myself. And then end up in some situation because of it, and now we refuse service.
Yeah, it's when I talk about being a healthcare professional, that's what I always say, that it's our job to give people tools to live, to have different choices and live a better life. We fix people, you know what I'm saying? And I think a part of that is understanding that people make mistakes and they're going to mess up life. And it is our job without bias to not pass judgment, just to fix them. It's kind of like when you go to the dentist, he doesn't go, oh, here comes Keelan, he done messed his teeth up again. You know what I mean? His grill is all jacked up. Like, dentists just understand people eat poorly and they mess their teeth up, and I just fix them and they just send you along the way. You know what I mean? And I think that for me, that is the perspective that's just my personal opinion, though. Opinion in regards to health professionals. Should be a health professional's perspective. People mess up life. That's what they do. They mess up their teeth. They mess up their bodies. They eat bad. And it is our job to get them in, duct tape them back together, and send them back into the world, you know? So when you're getting personal feelings and biases are coming into play, and just fix them. Just fix people. That's what we do. That's what you signed up for. So, but again, I am with you. I definitely understand the frustrations. I understand the worries. It's not like I said, this COVID, especially this Delta variant, is not a joke and it is not a game. It is not playing. So I understand, but I'm torn about that. I'm definitely torn about institutions sort of, you know, you got to do what you can to keep everybody safe.
Right.
All it takes, I got a room of 90 in stats and we are in a matchbox. We are literally in a phone booth and it's 90 kids in there. And it's like, all it takes is one. That's what scares me. Like,
in that, well, why are you teaching in the mask? You mic'd up or?
No, I'm mask on and just yelling as loud as I can. I mean, that's all you can do. But what scares me, again, think about what I just said now. There are 90 people in a room and all it takes is one to cough.
Well, yeah, I know. Like, I'm going to a room of 300.
So I ain't said nothing but a word to you. So I understand the push to try to get people vaccinated. And you know, I understand it from the other side. This idea or notion of being forced, feeling forced, or feeling like someone is making your life so complicated that you have to do something to live or have a livelihood. I get it. I totally get it. I'm just torn. I just know that this COVID thing and this Delta variant ain't no joke. And I just want people to just stay as safe as best as they can. And it may not be necessarily about you. For me, it's not necessarily about you. It's about the person that has some sort of pre-existing condition. It's about your grandmother. It's about those whose immune systems may not be able to fight it off like you.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's hard, you know. I give respect to both sides. Peace and blessings to everybody out there. You know, make the decisions that are best for you and your family. But it's complicated on both sides. It really is. And I just give respect to both, to all perspectives and all sides. You know what I'm saying? So,
yeah.
So anyway, you know, my advice is just everybody stay safe. Keep your hands clean. Try to wear a mask if you can, you know, and hopefully we can get through this. You know, like you said, I don't, you know, I see us getting, like you said, you're not mandated now, but you see it coming. And just, yeah. I see it coming. At least that mask mandates and stuff, I see that coming. So, I don't know. All right, so again, let us know what you think. B2Bpsych@gmail.com. B2Bpsych@gmail.com. All right, so moving on and moving forward with our conversations on this series about greatness. Trying to define greatness. Trying to figure out what it means to be great. And what are the characteristics and psychological factors that play an important part in going above and beyond just achieving something? What does it truly mean to be great at something? And we've got some guest speakers that are kind of come on. We have a commitment from a Mr. Ronald Jones. Ronald L. I apologize if you're listening. Ronald L. Jones. Okay. He is he's a life coach. He's a graduate student. He has been a graduate student. He's a life coach. He has several businesses. He's out doing his thing. So he's going to talk about greatness as it relates to sort of helping people and extending ourselves to help people and a lot of other things in between. So he will be our first guest next week, September the 1st. And from there, we've got a lot of other dynamic speakers that are lined up to come on and just give their perspectives as well. Okay. So, Dr. Chapman, what say you? Where are we moving with this conversation of greatness?
Well, a couple ways. And before we go there, so as we start to, we're still, this is an idea that's hatching. But as we bring people on, it's probably going to be somewhat like an interview forum where we're gonna ask some questions and see at the end of our time meeting with these people that we can find some common variables. Because that's one thing I'm very interested in is what's the ingredient? What's the psychological ingredient for greatness? And are there some common factors on these different variants of greatness? And while I'm thinking about that, I'm sure when you think about greatness, we slightly, for a second, we talked about the GOAT in basketball last time. You know, he was saying it was LeBron, and you know, we all know it's really MJ. But anyways, we don't have to get into that. But maybe as you think about greatness, there's probably a person that comes to mind for you. And if you're following any of us on our social media or you want to send us something on the email, maybe who is the person? What is the person that comes to mind when you think of greatness and why? I think that would be cool if you send us that. Either you could send it on Facebook, Daniel Chapman or Keelan Hinton, and or the email. But where do we go? We started hashing it out. We just started the basic parts of this conversation last week, and we were going back and forth about the greatness, success, trying to tease out the difference, see if we really thought there was a difference. And today, we're going to see if we can't narrow it down to some definition that maybe we agree on. We don't need to totally agree on, because it's okay for us to have differences of opinion. But then we'll use that as a place to go forward to explore the ingredients, what we each think or what we both might agree are the psychological ingredient involved in greatness.
Okay. So let's rock and roll. Where are we going?
We're still on that definition. We're still, what is it?
Before we get there, tell us one person that you would define as great and why.
I guess it pains me to say it, but the one that's on my mind the most is Kobe Bryant. Only reason it pains me to say it is because, look, I always respect greatness. I know y'all be thinking, oh, he hate on everybody. Hate on LeBron, hate on Kobe. That's not true. I respect greatness, but it's just that I guess when Kobe was playing, I wasn't the biggest fan of him overall. For lots of reasons. But besides that, I watch a lot of his commentary, what he used to say, his mindset, how he used to talk about the game, how he used to talk about life in general. So I think one of the people that comes to the front of my mind when I think about greatness is Kobe. And it, to me, is about that Mamba mentality, the mindset that he had, that he incorporated into the different areas of what he did, from basketball to his entrepreneurial kind of leanings. And the man was, I consider him to be like a greatness producing machine. And it all started with, I think, therefore I am. And you can see it resonate in a number of the things that he does.
Can a person be great and be flawed? What are the limits? Is there a... This is something we'll answer together. I'm not just throwing this on you. We'll answer this together. I wonder, can a person be great and be flawed? Or are there flaws that a person... Are there flaws that someone can have that can totally diminish their greatness? Like Bill Cosby.
Oh, snap.
Will we still consider Bill Cosby great? Can you still watch the Cosby Show? Listen, the Cosbys influenced generations of men to love their wives differently, to give their kids Zerberts, to talk to their kids sometimes instead of spanking their kids. A Different World, the spinoff from the Cosby Show, inspired our generation to think about college. You know how many people A Different World inspired to go to school, that made us aspire to want to go to college? Fat Albert, the cartoon, the impact that had on me as a child, seeing inner city black kids in cartoon form on TV. Is he still great? Or is greatness something separate from character? How important is character in being great?
Well, interesting you go there. I think I'm going to come back to this idea of, can you be great and have flaws? First of all, when I think about greatness, Kobe Bryant comes to mind, but Kobe Bryant is flawed. Michael Jordan comes to mind. I know, right, I'm basketball right now, but Michael Jordan is flawed. Martin Luther King comes to mind, but he's flawed. And greatness to me is not a person. It's a thing that you produce. So just like when you're talking about Cosby and all of the things that he created that really planted seeds for generations to come, that was something that he produced that was great. I think greatness spawns from a person, but it's not a person. It's something that one produces and could be separated. Even if you think about what we'll call quote unquote great men, because I, from my standpoint, I believe men do great things and do the opposite of great things. I don't necessarily know that there's a great man. But even biblically, right? If you think about people that were, you know, Samson, Moses, whoever, they all had flaws.
Yeah. Yeah.
And did those flaws take away from their production of a thing? That's a separate conversation. Then does greatness have to be totally about character? I'm not saying it doesn't, but I'm saying to me, there's different ways to think about it.
Yeah. I definitely agree with you.
The flaws that these people have, to me, illustrates the point. The problem is that when people do great things, we look at them as otherworldly. We look at them as something higher and something different. And that's probably why it hurts so badly when we find out that these people, these men and these women, have flaws, is because they're so great at one thing, the halo effect comes into play. We think that we look at them as if they aren't human. And it's a part of the reason why we're so hurt when we find out that they make mistakes. And that's a part of what I respect and love about Kobe and even about what's his name, Jordan. And about Martin Luther King was they're just dudes. They're really just people, and who make mistakes and who error and aren't perfect, but yet and still have these skills and these abilities and this drive to, I really love the idea of what you said, to create something. They're creating something that goes above and beyond themselves, that is bigger than themselves. That idea of Kobe's Mamba mentality is something that he created that so many other people, it's a philosophy. It's a way of life. It's a way of interacting. It's a way of living and a way of dealing with problems and issues. It's a way of problem solving and coping that went above and beyond him, that has inspired so many other people.
Yeah.
So I love that idea, this notion of greatness is someone who can produce or create something. I look at it as something that you can produce or create that can make other people's lives better. And that is mutually exclusive. People can be great at something. I wonder if all of these things are mutually exclusive, separate. You can be truly, obviously they are. These people are truly great at something, but have these tremendous flaws. And it hurts us so badly because we don't see them as people. But I like it because I know they error and I know they flaw, but they can be great. It makes me feel like I can be great because he's just a dude just like me.
Yeah, and I think that it's interesting because thinking about particularly what's in my mind now is Kobe and MJ, because I think some of the flaws I'm thinking about with them that somebody might call flaws, you know, how tough they are on their teammates. But that flaw is actually what makes them be able to produce greatness. So sometimes, depending on what the flaw is, obviously can't use this example for Cosby, but depending on what the flaw is, it might actually go into their greatness. So for example, you know, anybody who has been really wrapped into a cause, I'll use Martin Luther King, for example. I don't know for sure. I haven't really seen all the history, but I've heard that, you know, maybe he stepped out on his wife a couple times. And I'm not saying that that should be justified or not justified, but as that might be a symptom of not being able to be as close with his family because of all of the other things he was doing to create greatness in the civil rights movement.
Yeah.
That people may or may not agree with that. But the point is, when you get solely focused on one thing, other things drop.
Yeah.
They have to drop, which looks like flaws or are flaws.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you one of the absolute dopest statements I've ever heard in my life was what his wife said.
What'd she say?
When they asked her about him, when they asked her about infidelities, she looked and said, "The movement is bigger than my marriage." And I said, if that is not an OG, the idea that she understood his greatness and his path, and understood that while he had flaws and they had issues, there was something larger that he was producing that was bigger than her, as she said, her marriage, that was bigger than her, that was bigger than their family, that was bigger than everything. The idea that he had a partner that could see that. And maybe that's something we can talk about later. Is that important to have a partner that sees your vision? How important, psychologically and emotionally, how important do you think that that is?
Oh, I think that's super. Like, I think that is an ingredient for greatness. Interchange, success, both of those. But definitely to get to greatness and making greatness a little bit different than success, it's reaching your full potential and whatever you're doing to optimize it at the biggest level. You definitely have to have not only a spouse, you got to have the whole, whoever's in your team has to be like, oh, that's, you know, that's your vision. You know, that's what you're meant to do. Like someone or a team, someone and a team that supports us, that's where you're at. I think if you really talk to anybody who's done anything that we would consider great, there were people, even if they sit there and tell you like, oh, I did this all by myself, I'm self-made, I'm starting more and more, I live in life to believe, even though some people are driven and have more motivation than others, that nobody's really self-made, because greatness can't be done with one person. There's no way.
Yeah. And there are all these little parts and pieces and coaches and words of advice, all these little things that happen to you along the way that push and poke and prod us and give us inspiration that we probably never, that we don't pay attention to. And a lot of times things happen to us that we probably, that affect us in more ways than we could have ever imagined. You know, I think, and what's interesting is, not to say that I'm great, but all the things that have, a lot of my accomplishments are directly related to one saying, being at a corner store one day, just a mishap, just a fly-by-night experience, or bump into somebody and they say a word or a phrase that stuck with me forever. It's not always these large, overarching things that happen. Like I've told this story before. Me and my dad was at a corner store and he had like a dollar left out of whatever he was buying, and he bought a lottery ticket. And I was like, why you lose? I'm a kid. And he said, somebody got to win. To this day, he doesn't remember that. That stuck with me forever. That's a phrase and a moment that was fly by night that stuck with me forever and that has driven me through every step of my life. Literally, everything that I've ever done, that our adversity was tied to it, I always told myself, they got to pick somebody. Why not me? It led to this why not me mentality that I developed from the time, from that moment on, from the time I was a kid. That means if I told him about this, he would have no idea what I was talking about. So the question is, am I self-made? Because nobody helped me study. Nobody helped me grind. Nobody's paid for anything. But it's those little seeds that means he wouldn't remember that completely shaped and remolded and revolutionized the way I thought about opportunity, the way I thought about myself, the way I thought about life. Somebody got to win. Why not me?
Well, you know what also I think is interesting about that story? One, that your dad didn't remember it. Two, just because we say so many things, I mean, we can relate to this. Like, we do a lot of talking. People are probably like, hey, we wish we would be quiet. But we say a lot of things, so we can't track every word. But I think the thing that's really cool for people that are operating in, I won't use greatness because that maybe intimidates people, but maximizing your full potential. When you're out there, you're on your vision, you're on your post, you're doing what you're supposed to be doing, it's going to be likely that you're going to be doing what your father did for you, leaving little trails and not even knowing, you know, just speaking your truth, you know, just talking, having a conversation, and somebody grabs onto that. And that's going to be a result of your flourishing and your greatness that is a seed for somebody else.
Yeah. And that's what I meant the last time we had this conversation. For me, people who are great are people who plant seeds. it's not just solely whatever you're pursuing or you're trying to accomplish or you're trying to succeed. It's not just solely for yourself, but to some degree, you are leaving a trail. You are planting seeds and you're sowing seeds in others to some degree that helps make them better, that helps make the room better. Like, that is an ingredient. That is, for me, that is an ingredient for to be good or to be great at something. Real quick, station identification. This is Marsh University, WMUL 88.1 FM, and you are listening to Brother with Dr. Nate Chapman and Dr. Keelan Hinton. And we are here for all of your mental health, love, relationship, and community needs. And today we are continuing our series on greatness, trying to figure out what is greatness, what does it mean to be great, what are the ingredients to achieving greatness. And to follow in the next few shows, next few weeks, we'll have some speakers come on and give their perspective, their opinion, and things that they've done to achieve success in their lives. I'm sorry. Okay, moving on and moving forward.
Well, going back to that for a second, you were talking about when we think about greatness, it has to do with your ability to plant seeds, and that's important. And I don't necessarily disagree with that. I guess I just want to give another thought. I think that someone who has decided to focus a lot of energy into producing an excellent task or product or service, that it may not necessarily have to be when they decide that they're going to do this service, that it's definitely about, you know, I'm making sure that I'm going to contribute all of this to other people. I think that's good. And I also think if someone really puts all they can into something and produces an excellent thing, that it also can have the ability to impact people, whether they expect to or not. I'm sure people that started doing something, maybe not a sport, because, you know, sports, people watch sports. But I'm sure there are people in this world that have gotten great at something that never thought that that was going to impact anybody. And then after they got great at it, it's just something they like to do. They had a passion. They're really talented for it. And then when they got great at it, they started planting seeds they didn't even know they were going to plant. Just like, I just really like this thing. And I decided I would be good at it. And then when I became good at it, I decided that I want to be better at it. Then when I really put all my potential into it, all of a sudden that started planting its own seeds because of the genuine passion and connection that this person had to that thing. Because sometimes people like things that we don't really vibe with.
Yeah,
but then they got a whole following of people. I mean, particularly now in today's world, there's a whole bunch of things you can be passionate about, but people are going to have followers, you know, for like basket weaving, like, you know, or nothing, no disrespect to basket weaving.
But I'm saying something like, yeah, hit basket weave shaming.
Something that might not be interesting to me. Lots of people find interesting and you become passionate and then you get people that are with you on that.
Yeah, yeah. I like that. I mean, I agree that the intention doesn't always have to be. And to me, that in itself is dope. The intention doesn't always have to be, I am creating this to help other people's lives. But the notion or idea, I like the idea that you can be really great at something, and for whatever reason, it inspires other people to want to be better. It inspires other people, and you don't even intend to. You don't even intend to do it.
Right.
I can dig that. I can get down with that. I can dig that idea. But it's still, to some degree or another, for whatever reason, I still consider things that are great, things that make other people's lives better, intentional or unintentional, which you helped me add a caveat to that. It doesn't necessarily have to be intentional now. So I received that. I like that idea. I like that idea a lot.
So what do you think? What do you think are the key ingredients for you? What do you think are the key psychological, using our knowledge as psychologists, what do you think are the key psychological ingredients to greatness, producing something great?
I've said it before and I'll say it again. A hint, the first most important ingredient it has to be just a dash of narcissism.
You need it. That's true.
You have to be a fool to believe that it can be you. And that's just it. There has to be something wrong with you to believe. Look at all, you know, think about where, like you, for instance, I'm using an example. not in detail, but think so about.
It's called narcissistic.
No, no, I mean, but in I don't mean narcissism. That's for a lack of a better term. Think about all that you've gone through in life, and think about where you are now. And the idea that at some point or another, you believed that everything that I've gone through, that this can happen for me, that takes something different to believe it can be you. Because the odds and the statistics say it shouldn't be. And you have to, and you have something in you that I deeply respect and admire in a way that I can't put into words. I know I've never said that to you before, but I can't find words. I truly cannot find words to describe the level of respect that I have for who you are as a man and who you are as a person, and then what you've accomplished as a professional, because you shouldn't be here. There are people who've had rough times. Like, I've had some hard times. There are a lot of people who've had hard times. You should not be. There's nothing statistically or logically or rationally makes sense about who you have become as a man and who you have become as a person. But you're here. And you're shining. And you're still doing things. You know what I'm saying? And there was something in you. And we just, the thing is, I don't know if we know how to quantify whatever that is. With everything around you that told you you shouldn't be, you, like I said, like I talk about myself as a kid, I was too stupid to know that I was supposed to quit. Like, I literally was not smart enough to know that there was a point that I was supposed to die. I was supposed to quit. I was supposed to give up, and I just wouldn't, and I don't know why. Mm-hmm. And whatever that thing is, that's the thing, that we all have something in common. You have that, whatever that thing is, that you just don't know. The entire world is telling you and sending you signals that you shouldn't be and you should stop. And you just didn't listen. You just kept going for some reason. And I think that people who have achieved something, we all possess whatever that thing is. I just don't know how we measure it. I don't know what to call it. I don't know what to quantify. It's just like with great speakers. When I look at people who can speak, not that I'm a great speaker, but people who speak well, we all are doing the same things. We're reading the room. We're feeling energy. We're bouncing off of emotion. We all do the same things, and none of us can quantify what it is. It's just something that we do. And I think that with me and with you, again, going back, like being great, there is this not knowing, that there is this believing that it can be me that we have in us. There's this either believing that it can be me, or this idea of not quitting. And that's maybe two sides to the same coin. Like, whatever that is, that seems to be an ingredient that people who achieve things have. Believing, no matter what it, no how ridiculous it looks, believing that you can be the one that they choose. One out of a million. What, like my dad said, somebody got to win. They got to pick somebody. You know what I mean? We all just got that for whatever reason. And again, that's not me saying that I'm great, but I'm saying for me, the things that I have accomplished in life are big because I probably wasn't born with these, with the tools to do it, and didn't have the pedigree to do it. No disrespect to my family, but I'm just, you know what I'm saying? So yeah, for me, the gap in where I started, where I should be, and where I am is huge. Even though it's not Kobe Bryant level, that gap is still huge. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think all that is, well, I appreciate that, first of all. And then secondly, it's interesting because even as I hear you say, you know, you said, well, you know, I'm not great. You have, in many eyes, you have been able to accomplish some great things. And I think that is the crux of what happens to some people that don't reach their full potential. There's this idea that is created by society, right? And I agree. I'm going to give you some of my ingredients in a second. But I do think it takes a strong ego. For sure. You have to have some ego strength. Ego strength to me means more than just narcissism. But I'll get to it in a second. But society, to some extent, really doesn't want to hear how you think you're better than others. You know, it wants to hear, woe is me, humble, 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 all this stuff.
Yeah.
And I will tell you, I've heard from friends that I have that know other people that have been, maybe been in like programs I've been in, different things, that somebody has said like, well, you know, so-and-so doesn't like you because they think that you kind of conceited. I've never really saw myself as conceited, but I do know that I can carry confidence in certain circles and certain times. And I guess what I would like to say to the listeners that are kind of absorb this is that I don't think there's anything wrong with confidence. And I think that there can be a problem with inflated egos that are not based on reality. I don't think there's anything wrong with confidence. The reason that we think there is because we've been told to shrink down. We've been told to not be as bright as you actually are. We've been told it's okay to be great, but don't be saying you're great, you know, yeah. Or if you do, you're entitled. I think there's a difference between being entitled and actually being confident. And we err on the side of not being confident because we don't want to lose anybody we think we're great. And I think the reason that it affects people in general is not because other people are not great. I think greatness in you recognizes greatness in someone else and says, how come we're not being great? And then you get mad at that person.
Yeah. I think it's interesting you talked about this idea. You just mentioned this idea of greatness in you. You recognize greatness in other people. I heard Tiger Woods say once, like, all of his friends are, like, the best at what they do. And somebody asked why, and he said, because they're the only people that understand the way you think. Like, that's, you know what I mean? Like, he was friends with Roger Federer and Michael Jordan and Charles Barkley. And, like, when you're great, they're really the only people that understand the way you tick. You hitting golf balls on Christmas morning, they're the only people that understand what that drive means. To everybody else, you're ridiculous and you're crazy and you don't care about your family and life is more than what you do. And, right. You know, that's why great people hang around other people who've accomplished things, because they're the only people that they understand what that drive is. They understand that after you got, you know, it's you going home 1 a.m. and I'm going to read this chapter before I go to bed. And it's kind of like, go to bed. Most people be like, why aren't you in bed? Like, why? Yeah. Like, why aren't you asleep? I can remember when I started this program, this clinical program, and me and you was talking, and I was just like, you know, oh, I mean, I'm just going to get up and just grind it out and get up at 6. And you was like, yeah, like that was like, that's what you do. That's normal. That's what you're supposed to do. You know what I mean? Like, I'm talking about not sleeping and eating on a schedule and napping on a schedule, just talking about all this craziness to get through this, and I'm going to teach my classes at this time, and I'm going to do this 9 hours a day, and you was just like, yeah. When I say that, like, when I speak to my sister, she's like, but when you go to sleep, and you're wearing yourself out, and da-da-da-da-da, and that never crossed your mind. You was like, yeah, that's what it's going to, yeah, and this is what it's going to take, man, you better get to it. It was just, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. We get what it takes to accomplish something that may be larger than ourselves, or that may seem insurmountable, or, you know, we get what it means to do something hard. We just kind of get it. You know what I'm saying? You never once encouraged, make sure you eat right and you sleep right. And you was like, well, yeah, it's going to take some grinding, and you know what it takes. And okay, gotcha. Handle that. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's like right. You said, people who have done something, you recognize. When you hear when somebody is saying something that resonates to whatever the situation is, you know what I'm saying?
Right. Well, and it's interesting that you say that. One, it's encouraging. I think who you hang around is helpful, because they say birds of a feather flock together.
Yeah.
And what you input is what you output. So that doesn't mean you can have a diverse range of friends, but you got to know, if you're trying to get to a certain level, you got to know what's inputting in you, what's going in you, so what can go out. So it's good for you to keep that in mind. And also, that's encouraging. So when I'm hearing you're going through what you're going through, I remember when I was going through that.
Yeah.
And what I try to, whenever I can, voice it to you is that, hey, that's not going to last always. Yeah. It's going to be a different thing later on in your life. And having that circle can be really helpful, because the average person, and this is no disrespect to the average person, there's lots of reasons you might be okay with average, but you're going to stay at average because you're not willing to do what it takes to be on this other level. And yeah. What it takes to be on this other level is painful. You know what I'm saying? Staying up, you know, getting up early in the morning and doing those things. I know, because I was there. That hurts sometimes, bro. And you like, you know, you probably sometimes like, man, I wish I wouldn't have to do this. I want to do other things. And you just have to push through that to get to the next level. And that's what it takes to get to a certain level. And the other thing is, my belief for people who really are optimal is, and I don't want this to sound to people who are listening like he just thinks you should torture yourself. No, think about it like muscle growth. You go to the gym and you see the dudes that are really big. They're doing all the things. They're being disciplined about what they eat. And also they're always putting more weight on, and that's how they can tolerate more weight. So when you're going through these things and you know that you wanna flourish, you wanna be at an optimal level, it's training camp for the next thing, right? And I'm not saying you should always be chasing the next thing, but what's kind of like the scripture to whom, however it goes for biblical people. It's basically, to whom has much will be given more, whom has, that's not the exact words, but something like that. So in that context, for this situation, it's not about having much. You did something to get that much, which means you're growing your muscles to hold that much. And that's how you grow it to hold more.
Yeah. I just want you to know that my grandmother, Ollie Reed, is going to tear you up for tearing up that Bible verse. But we just going to we gonna skip over that. I'm pretty sure she might be listening. And she absolutely is going to say, he need to go back to Sunday school. Okay. I was just talking to a dear friend. Shout out Miss White. Everybody may know Miss White from loving relationship seminars that we used to do online. We had this conversation about we had this brief conversation about generations. What's different and what's changed over from generation to generation. It seems like, you know, we wonder if the kids in this generation now can tolerate some of the things that is kids, and can we tolerate some of the things our parents tolerated as kids? And the example that you gave just gave me some insight. This notion of idea of putting on weight, this idea of having gone through something. And that's what we talked about. We had this conversation about different generations have had challenges. People who went through the Depression, their will was iron because they was trying to survive. So there was a generation that went through things define generations and how tough they are and how tough they become. Mm-hmm. You know, the type of weight that is on them that gives them this durability to last. The Vietnam War, civil rights era. And the question is, what is this generation's, what are their challenges? What is the weight that they are called to carry that will make them tough? You know what I'm saying? And maybe because they don't have the same type of weights, they can't tolerate. I love that. You need to write that down. Like, they can't tolerate the same type of everything. Like, you'll hear some people say everything hurt their feelings because they didn't have the same type of weight that we had. We didn't have the same type of weight that past generations had that plays a part in sort of emotional and mental fortitude and toughness. What do you think about that?
Wow, I think that's something for people really to sit down and think about, particularly parents. This is why parents, no judgment. I know it's hard what you're doing, but some parents have come through a situation where you really had it tough. You know, you had to do a lot to get where you are, and all you want is for your loving daughter or son to have the best life they can have. But we're going back to this weight example, for example. So you had to lift extra weight in the gym. And that's something you had to do to survive. It wasn't about getting muscles. It was just what you had to do. And now you don't want your child lifting all these weights. But when you take the weights away, they gain no muscles. And it's not just about not really having weight. Sometimes weight has been taken away from them because you don't want them to go through what you went through.
Yeah.
And basically, You're making the weak weaker. Not calling the generation weak, but I'm just saying if they have no opportunity.
For a lack of a better term, like, we get what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah.
That is wow. That is absolutely. We got to put a pin in that. Write that down. I always say that, and then we'll, 2 days from now, we'll be like, what did we say? But one of us need to write that down because that is exactly what I did. I love my kids. My kids are great people. They will be great humans. But that is exactly what I did. There were things that I did as a child that I was like, should I have been doing that at 10? Should I have been doing that at 12? I don't want them to have these experiences. And I always question my kids. What's interesting is they develop some skills because they see how I handle adversity, and from watching me, they developed and caught on to some of those things. But there are a lot of things that I didn't let them go through because I didn't want them to have it the way I did.
Right.
And I wonder how that will play out later in their lives. Hmm. Now, I am extremely lucky and extremely blessed that they are as disciplined as they are.
Right.
But it's because they saw their dad go back to school at 40, you know, I'll be 44 Sunday. They saw me go back to school at 43 years old. And not only did they see me go out and do it, they saw me get up at 6 and saw me get up at 5. And they saw the coffee pot going. And they was just like, man, if he this old and he doing it, you know what I'm saying? What excuse do I have? Like my daughter said, like, what excuse do we have if you could do it and you an old man? I'm like, hold on, man. You know, watch all that old man stuff. But, you know, so some of this stuff that they just pick up through osmosis, but that's an interesting conversation. I love, you need to write it down. Somebody going to take that and write it. You better write it down for somebody else out there listening. Write it down. This idea of weight. And what is weight is, metaphorically speaking, the experiences you have, the trauma that you go through. The things that we have to fight through, that as we gain a little bit of control, we can opt out for our kids. We can opt out for the people around us. And does opting out help? Does everybody getting a trophy help? I know what it's like. Shout out George Porter Sr. I know what it's like to ride in a Lincoln. To ride in a long Lincoln 6 or 7 hours, play 7 or 8 games and 100 degree heat, get to a championship game and lose and go home empty handed and get nothing. And out there with heat exhaustion, 11 years old, 12 years old, to go all that way and have to drive back. And, you know, you got 8 people and 8 kids in a hotel room eating bologna sandwiches or whatever we did, whatever we had to do to get what we had to get to play, to make it all the way to a championship game, to lose, to have to come home empty handed.
Yeah.
That molded me in a very different way.
Right.
It made me understand that you could do your very best in life and still come out shorthanded. And that's just life. And you just keep trying and you keep plugging along.
Right. And to me, there's one ingredient there that we can definitely take out and put in our cabinet. It's, well, two things, two types of the same spice, I guess. One ingredient for greatness is opportunity to fail. And two, willingness to fail.
Yeah. I like that idea, the idea of willingness to fail. I think that you have to, like, you have to be willing to fail to have the opportunity to win. And that has to be a risk that you are willing to take.
Right.
You have to be willing to take a punch, because I know if I put myself in a position to take a punch, I'm also in a position to give a punch, metaphorically speaking.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, can you take no? Can you take that you're no good? And like, not listen to somebody else's perspective, but know that there is something special inside of you.
Right. And it could be, can you take that you're no good right now?
Yeah.
That's the problem. The problem is, like, if you tell me, oh my gosh, I can't hear I'm no good, because if you tell me I'm no good, then that means I'm going to be no good forever. And I'm not saying I'm not guilty of this. I don't. Sometimes I get a little like when I'm getting ready to look at my teaching evaluations, what did they say now? But then once I get through that, I'm like, okay, whatever's there are going to be some things I can work on, some things that are good, and I'm going to just use it to get better. If you don't have the ability to put yourself in a situation to take a punch, as you said, and it's not just about giving punches in the first place. Think about you, it's training to be a boxer. In order to train, you got to spar, right? You got to spar, and I don't know nothing about boxing, but we'll see where this goes. You got to spar, right? So somebody's hitting you, and you're learning that so you can be good at doing that crap. But if you don't get in that ring and learn how to spar, and that involves you possibly getting hit, you're not going to learn how to be able to duck, dive, and be the type of person that can give those massive swings. You're just sitting on the sideline, waiting, doing nothing.
And are we at a space now that we're telling people that they shouldn't have to take that punishment? And not only you shouldn't have to take that punishment, it's abuse if you take that punishment along the way. Again, maybe that's another conversation for another day, and we don't want to get too far off the beaten path of greatness, but I wonder if all of these things play an important part in, you know, is it hard to be great when you have, you know, I heard somebody say, man, it's hard to get up and want to be the best boxer in the world, or want to be the best, you know, MMA practitioner in the world when you're sleeping on satin sheets. You know what I mean? Like, it's hard to want to be great and do great things when you have everything at your disposal and you're comfortable. Comfort is a king killer. I truly believe that.
I believe that, and I know we're coming up on time, but I just want to take it a little step further. It's not always, okay, it is that comfort is a king or queen killer, but also that this person who's been put in that environment, I'm talking going back to the parent situation now, might actually feel comfortable and like the world is unsafe. Like if I actually try to do this by myself, it's not going to be okay, because that's the message that's been unconsciously sent. Yeah. You can't do this by yourself. I need to do this for you because you're not capable. You're not really okay. It's not just that it's comfortable for you. It's not even just that this kid wants to be lazy. This kid just doesn't feel safe because they've been put in a situation where they haven't had to do anything. They haven't built confidence in themselves or their ability to do it.
I hate that you would bring that up and make that statement at the very end of the segment. But I think that that's probably a really good place to start, is this notion or idea of, do we feel safe enough to take chances to be great? Do we feel safe enough to take these chances? This could go a lot of places. Do I have the resources to take chances? There are a lot of things that play an important part in why people don't take chances in doing something, in trying to achieve something big. You know what I'm saying?
True.
So, good stuff. Good stuff, my friend. Again, any questions, comments? We're up on an hour. Any questions, comments, or suggestions that you may have? B2Bpsych@gmail.com. B2Bpsych@gmail.com. Give them your website, your Coach Chapman website.
It's Chapman and training. What is it? Sorry, I'm blanking on it. Chapman Consulting and Consulting, training.com.
Right? Yeah. Okay, say it one more time.
Chapman Training and Consulting.com.
Okay. So contact Dr. Chapman there. You can hit us up on our Facebook pages. Any questions, comments, suggestions, or ideas. Also, b2bpsych@gmail.com. Again, as we always say, we always end, we thank WMUL and Marshall University for giving us this platform to talk about mental health issues, community issues, attachment issues, and everything else in between. As we always say, any perspectives or ideas that you hear on the show are the perspectives of myself, Dr. Keelan Hinton, as well as Dr. Nate Chapman. They're not represented by Marshall University, WMUL, or any of their supporters, affiliates, or sponsors. We always end the show by saying, graveyards are full of regret and potential. Make sure that when you die empty. Don't take any of your goals or dreams with you. Make sure the people that you love know that you love them. And again, as I always say, make sure that you're doing something that makes you feel alive and sets your soul on fire. We are only here for a breath, and make sure you make this ride a good ride. Okay. So I love you all. Peace and blessings to you. And as always, Dr. Chapman will take us out.
I guess I would just like to highlight a few things that I think came out in the ingredients that we were talking about. Hopefully you go back and kind of digest some of the points we were making. But the last one was these two ingredients that might be useful for you as a person or particularly as a parent. Ask yourself, am I giving my child opportunities to fail? Think about it now. You might have the mindset in your house that failure is not an option, which I'm not totally against. But if the child or person doesn't know that, failure can actually be an opportunity to learn and just fears it and does everything they can to avoid it, they're never going to be great. The other thing is, do you cultivate the willingness to fail, which goes along with that idea and the mindset that you instill in your child or yourself about failure overall? And the last thing I would say, just to remember, is that sometimes we go and we tell our child or children that they're great. I'm not against that, but just telling someone they're great for no particular reason is more likely to give them a sense of entitlement than anything else. I'm not saying not to uplift your child, but when you're encouraging your child, encourage them about some specific things, maybe about how critically they think about things or their work ethic or how they're inventive in this area. Give them specific things that they can work on and work towards. And if you can give things that are more about characteristics that they do and things that they can show improvement on, then they're going to have more of that. And eventually they will grow to be that great person you want to be and not the entitled person. The last thing I'm going to say is confidence doesn't mean that you're entitled. At the end of the day, I feel like we all were built and designed with greatness. And the reason that we get upset sometimes when we see somebody making it when we're not, it's not about that person at all. It's not just jealousy at all. All it is our inner greatness calling out to us and saying like, hey, how come we're not being great? And since we can't recognize that, what we express is bitterness or jealousy about this person. So next time you feel jealous about something, that might be a potential or a seed that's in you of greatness about something that you need to hatch. So let's hatch our seeds. We'll see you next week.
Well, you can tell everybody. Tell everybody, go ahead and tell everybody. I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man. Yes, I am, yes, I am, yes, I am. I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man.
WMUL FM, Huntington.